This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, and a chance today to learn about a special place where the impressive and extensive history of Marine Corps aviation is celebrated and preserved, the Flying Leathernecks Aviation Museum in San Diego, California. And in a bit, we're going to hear from a gentleman who spent a quarter century in the Marine Corps and was a real pioneer as far as helicopters are concerned. But when we left off, we were talking to the chairman of the board here at the museum, General Bob Butcher, who, among many other prestigious decorations in his career, received the Distinguished Flying Cross for something he did in his A-4 Skyhawk in the skies over Vietnam more than 50 years ago.
I had just joined a squadron, VMA 311, the Tomcats, that had been deployed to Vietnam in 1967. We'd only been in country about 15 or 20 days, and our squadron was put on a night hot pad. At night, if an emergency came up with somebody that really needed help and needed it fast, they would launch the hot pad. And there were always two airplanes that were on there ready 5 minutes, and you were ready to go help somebody. I was put on as a wingman of this other captain because the two of us had more A4 flight time than anybody else in the squadron. He had been there for 4 months, so he had a lot more time in Vietnam than I did. So he was the leader, and I was his wingman. And we got launched on a night close air support mission, and it was in the hills, and it was a recon team that was about to be overrun. And so we were airborne and over the objective area where they were, and we could see their pencil flare. We could see exactly where they were. But there was no flare ship available, and they were trying to get a flare ship launched from Da Nang, but it was going to be perhaps half an hour before that flare ship could get on site, and by that time, they would be overrun. There happened to be a Huey flying by. Huey is a Marine helicopter. Mm-hmm. Flying by that was in contact with them and talking to them on one frequency and to us on a UHF frequency. And we suggested, I don't know if it was me or my leader, one of us suggested, why don't you fire your tracers and we'll just bomb based on where your tracers hit. And so that's what we did. It was pitch black. It was dark. We were depending on them to give us what the altitudes were, where they were, so we would adjust our release altitudes from that. The first run, they actually ran us toward a hill, and I almost hit the hill. And I told them, I said, why don't we turn around and go the other way? So they turned us around, and we dived in from the other direction. We got back, and I said, well, that's what it's like being a flying night close air support. And it was exciting, but I just kind of forgot about it until my next duty station. All of a sudden, I get a call that says, hey, come on up here and tell us when you want your DFC awarded. And I said, what? DFC? What for? That's how it happened. Huey pilot had actually called back to the squadron and said, don't count those missions toward an air medal because I'm going to put him in for an award. Mm-hmm. I didn't know about it, but he put us in for the DFC, and we got it.
Sounds like it was a risky mission.
It was, what we got paid to do. We're Marines. We were supporting Marines. You hear that time after time. Once a Marine, always a Marine, and Marines take care of their own. And I don't know. We were Marines.
And if you didn't get the job done, Marines would have lost their lives.
Probably they would have. Maybe they would have been able to hang on, but chances are that recon team would not have hung on. But after our, the marks of the Huey were so precise and our bombing was so good that that recon team didn't have any more trouble the rest of the night.
How many missions did you fly over there?
180 that tour because I got short toured. My wife came down with an illness and I had to come home early. And it was fairly serious, so they left me home. Frankly, I was on track to fly over 450 missions. And that was my goal. The record at that time was 430-some missions in a year. And I was on track to break that record. So I was kind of disappointed that I had to come home. But I went back 2 years later and flew another 60 missions or so.
And what was that like, flying the A-4 in combat in Vietnam?
We were doing exactly what we were trained to do. It was a great feeling. It's a great feeling to be able to go out and know when you land from that mission that you did something to make a difference. There were a few missions that we flew that were really turning VC trees into toothpicks, but for the most part, what we were doing was making a difference, and that's what you were trained for. And it was very, very nice to be able to do what we were trained to do.
Well, and in talking about the museum, you talked about how you tell the whole history of Marine Corps aviation from just after the turn of the century to now more than a century later. Those guys in World War II, I mean, you have the Joe Foss display, and still a legendary pilot 75 years later. And then you get through the Korean War, and we're going to hear from Major Ferguson, who was evacuating the wounded in helicopters in Korea. And then you have Vietnam, and you've lived through that and all the years since, and I'm sure you've dealt with a lot of your fellow Vietnam veterans. Is there still a concern, a weight, a conflicted feeling because of the way your generation of veteran has been treated in this country?
It is truly heartwarming to see the way that veterans are treated today, because that's not the way we were treated. It was terrible coming back from doing what you knew was good work and doing what you knew was winning the war, to come back and see the way that the general public looked at us was really quite sad. We landed at, in my case, Norton Air Force Base, and was going to get on an airplane to come down to San Diego to meet my family. And we were told to change to civilian clothes before you go outside the gate, because otherwise you're going to get eggs thrown at you and you're going to get blasphemed. It was really quite sad. And then I got to see it personally, because I was an officer selection officer from 1971 to 1973, traveling college campuses and seeing up close and personal how we were treated. It was very sad. It was very sad because I knew that that was not the truth of what was happening. We Vietnam veterans get a bad rap. I mean, the general public, or a lot of the public at least, sees us as being obsessed by being left out, and that's not true. We all came back, and 99% of us just resumed our lives as they had been before. Came back, raised our kids, and that was it. You know, we had just done what we knew was good work, so it didn't bother us that other folks felt badly about us.
But you've seen a change over time?
Oh, boy, I'm telling you, the way that the current veterans are treated when they come back is truly heartwarming, and I think it's probably in part because the folks that treated us so shabbily finally came to the realization that they had done so. And so they maybe felt that they were overcompensating some for welcoming back the troops that are currently coming back.
I wonder if the work you guys are doing here at the museum and other places like it, if that makes a difference. Just making people aware of the sacrifices that are made and the price that's paid for freedom.
Some of that, I'm sure, is true. But even today, so very, very few people of the public really understand what the military is like and what we're doing. In fact, I think probably we're getting less and less realization or appreciation of the military, because fewer and fewer people are serving in the military. That's really part of why these museums are so important, because they give the public an appreciation of what the military is truly like and what the military does contribute to. We have an essay contest that we run here at the museum. We have middle school and high school students that we put in the two groups and ask them to write an essay on what honor, courage, and commitment means to them. And it's heartwarming to read those essays. They don't see honor, courage, and commitment as a Marine might see it. They see it from their perspective of a child growing up and the people that they see exhibiting those traits. And in many cases, it's their family members, their father or their mother, or a teacher that's very special to them, and how that person has impacted their life and has made them understand and appreciate the commitment that those people have. We had over 700 essays submitted to us last year. Uh-huh. And it's very hard to pick winners when you get that many really great essays.
Well, it gives you a little hope for the future, too. Huh?
It does. The young men and women of today are no different than young men and women have been down through the years. I mean, they're Americans. They may not understand as much about what it's like and what it means to be part of the United States, but they have a general realization of how special it is.
When you walk around this museum, do you ever pause and look at a picture or a display or an idea and say, that's why I'm here, that's one of my heroes, this is something that motivates me?
I do, but I'm telling you, this whole museum is just it's special. I see it day to day, so I don't understand it really until one of my friends will come in that hasn't been here for 4 or 5 years, or that hasn't been here ever, and tells me how special it is and how nice it is to see the representations that we have. And then I'll go out and take a look around and say, yeah, right, you know, they're right. This place is special.
Well, is there anything else that I didn't ask you about that you want people to know about this place or what you stand for?
Being a Marine is just being a Marine. Again, I don't know how they do it, but they convince us that we're special. And then it's up to us to be special so that we can pass on to the next generation how special it is. There aren't very many of us. Short story, I was on an airplane many years ago, and I just happened to be sitting by this lady, and she found out I was a Marine. She was flying back to D.C. to give a talk on branding, and she told me that she was going to talk about the Marine Corps. She said that she was, a couple of months before, had been driving across Texas, and she saw a lot of cars with Marine Corps emblems on the rear window. And she would occasionally see an Army or a Navy or Air Force emblem, but she saw a lot of Marine emblems. So she didn't know anything about the military. She assumed that the Marine Corps must be 4 or 5 times the size of those other organizations. And she was shocked to learn that we were by far the smallest. So she did quite a bit of study about the Marine Corps and the branding, and that's what she was flying back to D.C. to give a talk on.
It seems like it's beyond an association. It's an identity.
Yeah. I was a Marine, frankly, by accident, but it's a very special identity.
You want to say anything else about that, about the accident?
I was a senior in college. I had applied for a master's program, but they weren't going to make the selection in time. I went back to find out when I was going to get drafted, and they said, you're going to graduate on the 2nd of June. You'll be called for a pre-induction physical by the end of June for induction in the Army after the 4th of July. And I said, as an officer, I'll obviously go in as a lieutenant. They said, as a draftee, you go in as a private. And I didn't want to do that, so I said, okay, what are my options? And they said, well, go into an officer program. And so the Air Force recruiter was on campus just the next week, and so I stopped in to see him. I had never even thought about flying airplanes, but it sounded exciting. So I took his test and passed it. A couple of weeks later, the Navy recruiter showed up and took his test and thought it might be fun to fly off aircraft carriers, so I passed his test as well. And then the Marine recruiter showed up with a picture of a jet flying out at a 45-degree angle with Marines painted on the side of it. And I said, I didn't know you guys had airplanes. He had just... He was a great-looking young man, a dress blue uniform. And he said, yeah, we fly the same airplanes the Navy flies. And I said, well, took his test, might as well take yours. And he said, if you pass the Navy test, you passed ours. It's the same test. We fly the same airplanes. We do the same things. We fly off the carriers, too. And I said, I'm your man. So I signed up and went to flight school.
So you're the accidental general.
I guess.
Last thing, and feel free to add anything you think is important. Of all the things on display here at the museum, is there a story that is told, maybe about one particular aviator and something he did, that to you is just the epitome of Marine Corps aviation? Because you're the keeper of the history, yeah. Right? This is the Marine Corps Aviation Museum. So is there one of those stories that for you is the pinnacle of that?
There's probably two. Frankly, Joe Foss. I mean, Joe Foss is an icon in the Marine Corps. He's the hero of heroes. And Joe Foss, for very good reason. Joe Foss did a lot of things in his life. In addition to being the number one ace in the Marine Corps with 26 victories, he was a governor of South Dakota. He was the first commissioner of the American Football League back before the AFC and NFC. He was the very first, and he gave talks across the country about being an American. Joe Foss, just an absolute incredible individual, and I was lucky that I got to meet him on 3 or 4 different occasions, and his stories were captivating. And he never told the same story twice.
Because he had so many to choose from.
He has so many to choose from. And the other hero of mine is, there's a picture of Jay Hubbard, who is a guy that got me involved in the museum. There's a picture of him getting into an A4 in Vietnam. And Jay Hubbard is another hero of mine. He's perhaps the finest leader I ever knew. They say that leaders aren't born, they were made. For the most of us, that's true. But Jay Hubbard was a different breed. I think Jay Hubbard was a born leader.
And it sounds like he's a big piece of your motivation for keeping this going.
Yes, he is. I owed him a favor. Just can't say enough how special I think this place is and how much I think this place means, not just to the Marine Corps, but to the United States. It's a history that needs to be preserved, and that's what we're doing.
I guess I should ask you about the young man sitting across the table from you over there.
Oh, my. I never get tired of listening to Glenn Ferguson because I always learn something new from listening to Glenn Ferguson talk, and I'm looking forward to hearing him talk again today because he's a very special person. He was in the Marine Corps at a very special time, at perhaps the most important time of the Marine Corps, during World War II and Korea, and during the development of helicopters. He was in the Marine Corps at a very, very special time, and we're lucky that he has got a memory that is just unbelievable because I've forgotten all that stuff that I used to know, but he remembers every bit of it. In summary, he's a very special person.
And we are going to meet retired Marine Corps Major Glenn Ferguson when we come back. Head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for photos of the gentleman you're hearing from today and for more information on the Flying Leathernecks Aviation Museum, where admission is always free. It's open 6 days a week in San Diego, California, and Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.